content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today's stories include NCSU program helps PhD earners land industry jobs, and as unemployment falls, employers are looking to migrants to fill jobs. And we'll begin with NCSU program helps PhD earners land industry jobs. Prospects for PhD earners are dismal in the academic job market, with stories abounding of people who have doctorates serving lattes at Starbucks. NC State University has taken on that conundrum with a new program that leads science, technology, engineering, and math doctoral students to careers in industry. Known as A2I, or Accelerate to Industry, the program started last year with 50 students. It's so popular that NCSU trademarked the curriculum, which is now offered at the University of Florida, the University of Arkansas, and soon at other campuses around the country. The program is something of a crash course in business for hardcore scientists who rarely make it out of their solitary world in the lab. They learn soft skills such as teamwork, networking, project management, mentoring, and marketing their ideas. They're exposed to industry leaders and recruiters who can offer advice and ultimately jobs. On Friday, the 60 students in A2I did product pitches, Shark Tank style, at the end of an immersion week of training. The program is sponsored by companies such as Lord Corp, ABB, and Eastman. Increasingly, graduate students see their future in industry, said Laura DeMars, Assistant Dean of NCSU's Graduate School. It's depressing, to be honest with you, how few PhD candidates actually enter into the academic pathway, DeMars said. We really feel a need to create meaningful opportunities for career readiness and development for our STEM grad students. U.S. universities awarded nearly 55,000 research doctoral degrees in 2016, according to the National Science Foundation Survey of Earned Doctorates, a report released this year. 45% of doctoral earners with promises of jobs said their main role would be in academia, according to the survey, which also reported a 7-point decline in academic employment commitments for science and engineering, PhDs, in the past decade. If academia is not a viable path, the PhDs need to be steered elsewhere, DeMars said. The program aims to give the budding scientists the tools they need to jump into a job at a chemical company, a manufacturing firm, or a pharmaceutical startup. These are just good skills to have, but we don't address them directly as part of their academic training, DeMars said, adding, how does one navigate a corporate landscape? We don't learn that in the academy. An added bonus is that for 1 week, the students get out of the lab and learn to talk about their science in a broad way, connecting to people who work in science in the private sector every day. Amit Mishra, 27, a PhD student in chemical engineering, started at NCSU thinking he would ultimately be in a faculty position. Now, though, he would like to get some industry experience before returning to the classroom and lab someday. He also likes the idea of working in product development. I'd like to have my research go into a product that is eventually sold to a consumer, said Mishra. Leandi Kruger has had a long pathway through science labs at Duke and NC State, where she started her education thinking she wanted to be a veterinarian. She later worked in a basic science lab at Duke, earned an MBA there, and now works in a research collaboration between Duke and NCSU's vet school. She's earning a doctorate in cell biology. The Immersion Week has broadened her view of what kinds of careers are possible. One thing she has always known is she likes the intersection of business and science. Labs are just businesses, bringing money in and putting money out, said Kruger, 34. A lot of them are mismanaged, so I wanted to beef up my skills in that area. It was the corporate sponsors who drew Joseph Tilley, 26, a chemical engineering student, to A2I. The company's work in his field of research, polymer coating systems. He said he was able to gain insight into what the companies value in their new hires. Now he knows what he needs to work on in the next year before he graduates. Tilley is also learning to market himself. I don't do it enough. I never really learned how to do it, he said. It's helping me develop a bit more confidence. I'm learning to speak about my work and myself in a way that is interesting and engaging and more marketable than I was previously able to verbalize. There's a misconception that the goal of every doctoral student is to be an academic, said Peter Harries, interim dean of the graduate school at NC State. The drumbeat that you hear is why we are producing all these PhDs when there are no academic jobs, Harry said. But in reality, there are lots of other jobs that need the skills that PhD students have. There's something special about going through that process of really focusing on a specific area or doing research in an area that really hasn't been done before. There's a lot of value to that, and I think that just gets glossed over. At the Immersion Week, corporate scientists told the students about the thrill of seeing their innovation move out of a lab or research paper and into production. Then you're hooked, said Seth Carruthers, Global Technology Director of LORD. Carruthers, a PhD in chemical engineering, told the group Thursday that he wished he had something like A2I when he was a graduate student. Harry said the goal is to open students' minds to new opportunities. If we're going to bring them in for PhDs, I think we do bear some responsibility to help do what we can to make them successful. And next, as unemployment falls, employers are looking to migrants to fill jobs. One of President Donald Trump's priorities, low unemployment, is complicating another, curbing immigration. With the number of jobs available exceeding the number of Americans seeking jobs, employers are looking beyond the border to fill openings, and migrants are coming to the country in search of work. Hotel and restaurant owner Todd Colwart is short more than two dozen workers this season for his Mackinac Island, Michigan businesses. You can't hire a line cook right now. It's impossible, even for $20 an hour, he said. We usually fill the gap with visa workers, but we can't even get those this year. The Labor Department said Friday the unemployment rate was 3.9%, near the 18-year low set in May, and employers are adding jobs at a faster pace than last year. Trump has made clear employers should be trying to attract American workers through wage increases and other incentives, not filling jobs with immigrants. Curbing immigration is essential to growing wages and ensuring available jobs go to American workers, not foreign workers. Deputy White House Press Secretary Hogan Gidley said, as immigration curbs are put into place, more and more Americans will be absorbed back into the workforce, especially those who have been left out due to poor work history or difficult life circumstances. The administration has made it harder to come to the U.S. for work, legally or otherwise. Work visas are costly, complicated, and limited. Large-scale job-seeking migration through a porous border is long gone. This summer, the administration tried to deter would-be immigrants by adopting a zero-tolerance policy, prosecuting anyone caught crossing the border illegally. It resulted in nearly 3,000 children separated from their parents at the border, prompting international outrage. Trump eventually stopped the separations, and the government was forced by a judge to reunify families. Still, tens of thousands of people cross the border illegally every month, many seeking asylum from violence, but often they're coming because of the prospect of work. Dahlia Edelson Bajuk traveled with his 12-year-old daughter from Guatemala to the United States, only to be separated from her at the border, reunited, and deported home. Sitting at an immigration facility in Guatemala City, he said they came for work. I needed to try to make a better life for my family. I wanted them to have what I could not give them here, he said. There are many, many jobs in the States. Frandy Fravel, 35, joined a wave of Haitians who came to Tijuana, Mexico from Brazil starting in 2016. Brazil welcomed Haitians after Haiti's 2010 earthquake, but Fravel grew tired of factory jobs in Mexico that barely allowed him to cover rent and food, and lured by the prospects of better work and joining family near Miami. He lined up with his 5-year-old daughter at the border crossing. "I'll take whatever I can get," he said. Many economists say immigration is actually good for the economy, and migrants provide complementary work to the jobs Americans do. Despite Trump's push, some business owners say they just can't get Americans to fill the jobs. A.J. Erskine is vice president of Cowart Seafood Group, which includes a Virginia oyster company of about 75 employees. Entry level is $12.13 an hour, he said. I don't know how much higher we can go. He said the company has been in business more than half a century, and that despite massive recruiting efforts, it can't keep American workers. We just don't have people who want to come out and shuck oysters at 3 a.m, and I don't blame them, he said. Some, like Erskine, are willing to front the cost associated with a temporary work visa, about $4,000 per employee for workers holding down seasonal, non-agricultural jobs. But the visas are capped at $66,000 annually, with 15,000 additional visas this year. Economists say the hiring crunch could be eased in part by increasing the number of visas available during boom years and decreasing them when the economy is weaker. But those changes must be made by Congress. Those turning a blind eye to immigration status or hiring people with false identification face crackdowns by immigration agents. Agents raided an Ohio garden center in the summer, arresting 114 workers and accusing the business of unlawful employment of migrants and fraud. It's not worth the risk for us to hire people we're not sure about, said Calliwert, the hotel and restaurant owner. But a lack of staff means the business can't grow, he said. Representative Dave Brett, Republican from Virginia, a member of the conservative House Freedom Caucus, said he did not think the lower unemployment rate would weaken efforts to restrict illegal immigration. The irony is, it makes it much more transparent what the real problem of the labor market is, Brett said, citing about 10 million Americans not in the labor force. And next, local governments tout benefits to woo workers. In one sense, Durham's growing popularity among job seekers makes his job easier, says James O'Donnell, head of talent management and acquisition for city government. Durham is growing and is getting national attention as a great city to live and work, so we seem to be getting applications from outside the local market as people are relocating, he said. But the city's private employers, including many new companies, are getting the same applications, meaning the employer who hesitates could miss out on a good hire, O'Donnell says. Finding qualified candidates for hard-to-fill positions is always challenging, no matter the jobless rate, he said. But now there is an urgency to hire quickly before we could potentially lose a candidate. O'Donnell isn't alone in seeking to quickly fill job openings with the best candidates. Across the triangle, his counterparts face the same challenge. In July 2009, 1 month after the Great Recession officially ended, the triangle's jobless rate was 9.1%. Today, it's 3.3%, according to data from the state. Tim Mays, interim head of human resources for the city of Raleigh, doesn't have to see the data to know that the triangle's jobless rate is near historic lows. He can see it in the number of applications coming into City Hall. The overall pattern for most jobs is that there has been a decrease in the number of applications that the city receives in comparison to prior years, he said. In 2010, there was a greater number of applications, presumably due to the high unemployment rate. O'Donnell empathizes. 3 times in the last 4 years, he said, the city of Durham has needed to hire an electrical inspector to inspect work in commercial buildings and other new construction. The first time, in 2015, the city received 34 applications, and 24 of those job hopefuls met the minimum qualifications for the job. The next time around, when Durham needed 2 inspectors, the numbers fell slightly. 33 applications and 23 qualified applicants in 2016. But this year, when Durham needed another electrical inspector, the city had just 20 applicants, and only 15 met the minimum job requirements, O'Donnell said. Put another way, between 2015 and 2018, the number of people seeking that job fell 41%, and the number of qualified applicants fell 37.5%. The drop-off didn't surprise O'Donnell. I'm not sure I expected any differently, he said. We directly compete with the private sector, and when the sector heats up, the public sector seems to be overlooked. The Triangle's building boom and growing tech sector especially are bane and blessing when it comes to filling local government job vacancies, O'Donnell said. The effect is both positive and negative from a supply perspective, he said. We have many more construction and tech candidates that are coming into the market to take advantage of the boom. But the boom also increases the number of companies competing for these candidates. Not surprisingly, then, IT jobs and jobs in skilled trades can be among the hardest for local governments to fill. It has been more challenging for us to find experienced construction and skilled tradespeople, electrical, plumbing, building, mechanical, as well as civil engineering and IT positions, O'Donnell said. Experienced construction candidates are in high demand in the market, especially candidates that can proficiently operate the specific equipment. Like Durham, Raleigh is finding it harder to fill jobs that are also in high demand in the private sector, May said. Technical planning and construction positions are difficult to fill due to the boom in the Triangle's economy and the specific skill sets that are in demand in the market, he said. One problem for both public and private sector employers is that the talent supply in skilled trades doesn't appear to be keeping pace with the demand, O'Donnell said. The electrical, plumbing, building, and mechanical skills trades seem not to be attracting as many high school students as they used to, he said. But the demand is, and I think will continue to be, very high. Paul Kane is Executive Vice President and CEO of the Home Builders Association of Raleigh in Wake County. Of the shrinking talent pool in skilled trades, it's a problem that just didn't happen overnight, he said. It began years ago with high schools dropping shop classes because they thought young people needed to prepare instead for a four-year college degree, Kane said. As a result, they're just not embracing the industry, he said of young people. The average age of contractors is going up. Even though Kane knows some trim finishers who earn six figures, there's this perception that it's dangerous, low-paying work, he said, of construction. Good-paying construction jobs have been a little stigmatized, he said. We're trying to overcome that, Kane said. That effort includes working with Wake County Public Schools, Wake Technical Community College, and NC State University to reverse the slide in young people pursuing careers in skilled trades, Kane said. It's an effort that will take time to bear fruit, he said. In the meantime, we still have houses to build today. And next, Wells Fargo erred by foreclosing on 400 homeowners. Wells Fargo and Company foreclosed on 400 homeowners after improperly denying them loan modifications that could have allowed them to stay in their homes, the bank said in a regulatory filing Friday. From 2010 to 2015, amid the recovery from the housing bust that caused millions of Americans to lose their homes, the bank made miscalculations when determining whether borrowers qualified for loan modifications. That led the San Francisco bank to improperly deny modifications to 625 borrowers in the foreclosure process. The bank eventually completed foreclosure on about 400 of them, according to Friday's filing, a revelation that could spark fresh anger over the bank's practices. The bank said it has set aside $8 million to compensate customers, which works out to an average of $12,800 per borrower. Wells Fargo spokesman Tom Goida said the bank has not disclosed how much individual borrowers will get. All 625 of the impacted customers are receiving what we believe is appropriate remediation given the circumstances, he said in an email. We're very sorry that this error occurred. Goida also said some of the 400 borrowers who lost their homes might still have, regardless of the modification error. There's not a 100% clear cause and effect relationship between the modification denial and the ultimate foreclosure, he said. The bank turned up the problem during an internal review. Wells Fargo has been conducting a wide-ranging inquiry into its multiple business units after a series of scandals, but Goida said he could not say what specifically prompted the review of the loan modifications. The improper denials are just the latest instance of consumer harm caused by glitches, poor oversight, or fraud at Wells Fargo, which remains under close regulatory scrutiny following its 2016 disclosure that employees may have created millions of unauthorized checking, savings, and other accounts. And next, Lonely Planet offers three $20 guidebooks to cruise destinations. Travel publisher Lonely Planet has launched its first guidebooks to cruising. The three new books out this summer are Cruise Ports Alaska, Cruise Ports Caribbean, and Cruise Ports Scandinavia and Northern Europe. The books include color maps, reviews, recommendations for activities, and outings in ports of call, including shopping and dining, as well as tips on how to save time and money. The Guide to Scandinavia and Northern Europe offers sections on Berlin, Amsterdam, Copenhagen, Stockholm, Helsinki, Reykjavik, and St. Petersburg, Tallinn, Estonia, Riga, Latvia, Poland, the Shetland and Ormsky Islands, and Oslo and Bergen, Norway. The Caribbean Guide to Perfect Days on Shore cover Miami, Cozumel, Mexico, the Cayman Islands, Jamaica, Bahamas, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, St. Kitts and Nevis, St. Martin, Turks and Caicos, Aruba, Antigua, Curacao, and Barbados. The Alaska Guide includes sections on Seattle and Vancouver, where most Alaska cruises originate, along with a look at Alaskan ports, parks, and destinations like Sitka, Juneau, Haines, Skagway, Whittier, Seward, Anchorage, Glacier Bay, and Denali National Parks. The guides also have sections on trip planning, including month-by-month guides and advice on choosing the right cruise for you, along with tips on everything from visas to ground transportation to tours, and the book retails for $20. Next, John Boat Casket lets you go out in style. The Arkansas company has outdoor enthusiasts covered when they are ready to go on life's final fishing trip. Glory Boats of Little Rock make small-scale versions of aluminum John boats, but the vessels aren't meant for the water. They're intended to be buried. Owner Joel Schmidt came up with the idea to create boat-like funeral caskets after his father, John, wound up in the emergency room after falling from a ladder a couple of years ago. The injuries were enough to make Schmidt question whether his father, who was 74 at the time, had established any funeral plans or wishes. In an attempt to lighten the mood, Schmidt cracked a joke telling his dad that without knowing those wishes, he might have buried him in his fishing boat. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.